Let's talk about the years with your first husband, starting in 1934. You met him, you got married. You were still working at wherever you could find a job.
Right. We were both trying to work wherever we could, whenever we could, and so on. It was a very rough time for most people, and we were no different. We had the one-room place, and then we got something a little bit larger. We moved a lot. We trying to improve ourselves, so we didn't always make it. But we were not too well settled at that time. Because of the job would take us from place to place, and trying to find, to meet the needs that we had. Now, we both of us at that were in the radio and machine and tool industry in various ways, in different kinds of ways, but we were both in that general industry. And we went through an awful lot of jobs. Short time, a little longer time, and so on. But we really didn't get settled into a long time employment in almost in any place. And basically, that's what I remember of that from the point of view of working. That's what was happening at that time. Meantime, we were we were both in the Young Communist League. There was the beginning of the anti-fascist movement. We were active in that. We were still active in trying to organize the shops. We were working with the plants. I mean, outside. When I say that, I mean we used to do such things as going to the shops early in the morning to distribute literature, leaflets, to speak to the people, to try to make connections, contacts that who could be organized and form a shop group, so that we could organize the plant. Even before there were unions in the plants, in some plants there were Young Communist League and Communist Party cells, they used to call them, which functioned inside the plant and tried to organize the workers around various problems, issues that would come up, and basically trying to lay the groundwork for unionization. So we participated in many of these things. We used to sell the newspaper on the streets and at the shops, and so we had routes. We did very much of the regular communist work in the community and in the and around the shops. That was our role in that period. Eventually, I got went to work for Montgomery Ward. I got rid of my other name. This period. Once I got married, I dropped it and just took on the Florence Hall, and I was glad to, because
you used the word sell. Could you explain that?
Well, I said, as they were called at that time, it was a group of members of the Communist Party or the Young Communist League within a certain plant. They would be organized as a group that would meet together and try to discuss, find the ways and means to take action in the plants and to build, the workers' understanding of the class struggle and try to develop activities against the company, and for not just against the company but for correcting some of the. Of the grievances, we call them now, you had nobody to go to with the grievance. You had to just make your own fight, without a union, without any support, and laying the groundwork for union organization. That was really the role at that time.
What happened if, okay, you're standing out front and you're handing out literature, and the employer didn't like it? What steps? What would happen at that point?
Well, they could call the police, they could send a goon squad out, all kinds of things could happen to you. Oh, many times, different things, you would get roughed up, many times they'd just be told to leave. It depends on where you were at and who it was. In certain places, we only women went, because it would not be as rough with the women.
What places were those?
Well, for instance, we used to distribute leaflets at Stuart Warner, at plant that I later got into during the war years, and the union was in and helped to develop the union. But at that time, it was not organized, and they would chase people away, and you know, they had plenty of guards and so on of their own. They would intimidate people. Sometimes you had the support of the workers, and sometimes you found different ways to distribute. If you couldn't stay there, you left and you went down the block, and you know, so that's part of organizing. You found your ways of doing it. But there are times when you went away, and there are other times when you came back and stayed to make the fight. You know, it depended on the needs and on the strength of the groups that you had, the support of the workers.
What happened to you? So you got a job in a place, and you were trying to organize, and you were caught at it. Of course, you were probably fired, in all probability.
Yeah, of course.
Was any other action taken?
Well, no protection. No. They just got you off there. They just got rid of you. And
blacklisted you?
Sometimes. You didn't know until later on.
Okay. When you were blacklisted, the only way you would know is if you went to another company for a job.
You have to go to someplace else, and many times you didn't find out until you were on the job already. You were already working there, and all of a sudden they would come out and tell you that they're letting you go, and the rest of the place was still working. They didn't have to give you any explanation. There was no union protection, there was no seniority, there was nobody to talk to. They didn't have to give any explanation at all.
Okay, I'm not quite sure on my dates on when Social Security numbers were issued, but I would imagine going back before, let's say, 1934,
mm-hmm.
You were able to use a different name and work different places because the Social Security number didn't follow you.
That was about 1938, I think it came, or something like that, and I already had a married name, a new name, and I didn't have to change names. I just stayed there. Even later on, when I was blacklisted, I did not change my name again. I left the plant and went and got a job somewhere else. And in some cases, fights were made on this kind of thing, but mostly before you had a union organization, you had no place to debate it.
Your days were filled with working and trying to organize, trying to get things together. How many of your nights were spent, you know, after work, at meetings and organizing?
Oh, a lot. At meetings and classes, you know, and visiting people and selling the paper. You know, if you got a subscription to the paper, you would go to visit that contact to try to bring them into other things. It's a very, when you're working in a community, it's a very, you know, it can be a daily, as much time as you can put in. But we had a lot of meetings. We belonged to all kinds of things. We became president of the chairman of the club, as we were called at that time. And then we were on a section committee, and then we were, you know, we got into the higher bodies. So we were meeting weekends. At one point we got to the district committee. We were a member of the district committee, you know, depending on where we were. But I was involved in a lot of meetings and classes and visits and organizing. I mean, if you worked all day, the only time you could see the workers would be at night, if you could get them together and talk to them, then you would try for that. Yeah. So I spent a lot of time.
Amongst the members of the Communist Party that you knew, were there a lot of women in the Communist Party?
Yes.
Did you sit down and, as women, as a group of women, did you sit down and talk?
Well, at various times, various actions amongst the women. Women sat down and talked, by themselves. But the Communist Party has at various moments organized such a thing as a Women's Commission, which was a body of people to try to organize the activities of women and to try to organize the discussion of the women in the party, as well as the men, on women's problems and women's issues and so on.
What?
And So we participated, and I was on some of those commissions at various times in my life. They didn't solve many of the problems, and many times I eventually refused to be on such commissions anymore, because many times they became too involved in the individual woman's life, each woman's life, and her own particular problems, and it got so that the pressure was for the Communist Party to solve the problem in that home, and that you just can't have a political organization that can do that individually. And unless the Communist Party takes up a massive program on such a thing, which it did not do at that time.
You talked about solving women's problems, women's issues. Can you give me an example of some of the things you would talk about?
Well, there were many discussions and some resolving of such problems as child care. How could women go to meetings? The division of work between the men and the women. It goes on to this day, and it's in many places that the party club should supply money for a babysitter, so a woman can go out if there's no other, you know, if there's no other way to do it. If the man, let's say, is working full time, his time is not known, or if he's working nights, so what, you know, whatever it is. That was always a big question, the whole problem of whether women could be active, you know, in other things besides the home, you know, just the home. That would be a big problem, the whole relationship between men and women, need to make a change in the relationship between men. Some of the discussion, as I say, that's still going on today. It hasn't changed that much. It's changed only insofar as there's the women have broken out more and have made a lot of changes themselves. But then you had other, you know, other particular problems that, depending on the community and so on, like certain communities would have a need for a nursery, and the women would be in the leadership of it, but the struggle in the party was to make the whole group responsible, not just the women, you know.
Did you feel, and looking back on it, did you feel that there was discrimination against women, that there was chauvinism, so to speak?
Of course there was, and I would say it probably still have run, you know, running time. Not in the same way anymore, I wouldn't think, but there was a great deal of male chauvinism. It was a constant battle. Now, some of us had more of it, some of us had less. You know, a lot depends on both in the home and in the party organization. The different women struggled in a different way, you know. And I think some of us conceded to it at various times because we didn't know how to fight it, so we just were trying to break into things anyway, and we sort of, I guess you would say, we accepted it to some extent, you know, because we couldn't mobilize the party. But there was a fight for the women to be in the leadership, in the higher organizations. In many cases, the women were running the community organizations, especially when we get into the war years and towards the war years, where the men went away. We were actually we were running big branches of the communist movement, you know, and all kinds of activities, and yet we were not in the leadership at the top. You know, so we had many struggles and discussions and arguments in the central bodies, you know, the district bodies, the city bodies, the local, the what we call the section, regional groups, and so on, and a continual pressure to develop women as well as black people, you know, and so on. But it was a constant problem.
What were your feelings and the party's feelings when Stalin and Hitler signed their pact?
Well, I must say that I was not very aware of the meaning of it at that time, as I am at this time. And I accepted the explanation of
what
the Communist Party, that it was necessary to do this at this time in order to, because England and France and the others were were turning on the Soviet Union, and therefore it was done in order to prevent, in order to stop that. I think, well, all I'm saying is that I'm giving it to you the way I knew it at that mm-hmm. time, and I'm saying it that way because I just really just accepted it and didn't go into it. Later on, now, this time, I have other feelings about it. But I was so involved in what was happening in my community and my shop and all the rest of it, my own life and what I was doing, that I really did not participate in that argument too much.
Do you remember there being maybe some members, a lot of members, who were upset by Stalin and Hitler coming together?
No, not around. I don't remember too many being upset. I was not in the in the higher bodies at that time. I was not in the like the district committee and so on, where much of the discussion took place. And therefore, I really didn't participate. But I don't remember there being that much upsetness in our district, in our area. And there probably was in other places. But yeah.
You're still living in Chicago?
Yes.
At this time?
Yes.
I don't remember the year that the pact was signed. I remember studying it in history. I know it had to be 1930-something, maybe 1940. 30,
yeah, 39 or 40, yeah, yeah. Around there. That's before Pearl Harbor, which is pretty nice.
You said that your husband served in the army.
Mm-hmm.
As a communist, okay, how would he go and serve in the service, besides the fact that he had to? I mean, you know.
Well, he didn't have to.
He didn't?
No, because he didn't go, he went into the army in 1940. War.
Mm-hmm.
See, towards the end, he volunteered. He wanted to fight fascism.
Mm.
And many of the communists fought in World War II because they were anti-fascists, and they fought against being rejected by the army, and because they wanted to get into the fight against fascism. There are many communists who fought and many who gave their lives in that war. So that it was not that difficult to get in. What was difficult was to be sent overseas. Many of the people joined the army, and then they were, because they were communists, were moved around from one office job to another kind of office job. They had great skills, and were not being used, and they had huge, long battles to get sent into the battlefield. And to use their skills, because they were so anxious to fight Hitler and to fight fascism. So I that's not unusual.
When the United States entered the war, how did it change your life?
Well, it changed my life in the sense that I began to think about going back into the plant. We really should go back a little
okay.
bit. I had a second child born in 1942, a son, and that's why I said my husband did not have to go into the army. We had two children at the time that he went. So I was home for a while. Yes, he was working on the war plant, and he was working nights, he was working very long hours. And I was home at that period for a while, for a year and a half or so. And I was very active in the streets, in the community, with fighting, well, even went into such things as selling bombs to advance the war efforts, you know, in the community. Because we were supporting the fight against fascism. Against,
mm-hmm.
We were supporting the fight against Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
So in all kinds of ways. But we had other struggles that were going on at that time that were really interesting besides everything else. We were fighting, for instance, for rent control and price control, believe it or not, in those times. Because, and did win rent control in Chicago, by the way. because there was a shortage of housing and a shortage of everything because there was no building going on. And we had some tremendous community activities around the whole question of rent control and price control and control of profits, as you know, because they were trying to hold wages down too, because you know, it was part of the war, so you were supposed to go along with that. It's not different than what you hear today, you know, in that sense. So you have to think of the conditions of the time when you're talking about what was going on. And then, of course, so I was still active in the Communist Party. At that time, the Communist Party had gone in for a change of name to the Communist Political Association under the leadership of Earl Brower. And that's another part of history. I don't know, you know, I don't know how much you're going to do on this. You really need to go into research and do some study, because it's a long history. It was Earl Brower's contention that the party accepted in that period that because Stalin and Roosevelt and Churchill had met together and there was the Allies were working together and so on, that there was going to be a new feeling of being able to work together, and that eventually the capitalists were going to be pushed out by this very internationalism that was going to take over, you know, and so on. Now that's shorthand, you know. You really have to go back and. But anyway, so therefore we didn't need these small cells. The Communist Party should come out and become more open, and was not harassed as much at that time. That part's true, because it was supporting the government, basically, the government actions at that time, and because the corporations weren't worried because they were getting paid on a cost-plus basis, so they didn't have to worry about profits in the same sense as in a non-war period, you know. So you have that kind of collaboration going on, and therefore we changed the name to Communist Political Association. Instead of being small community groups, sort of semi-legal, semi-illegal, if you want to put it that way, we became large groups in the community, 150 people in a club, working publicly, you know, and so on. Although the people in the shops were still very cautious. I must say, their experience was better to be cautious. But even there, they became more public, you know, and more visible, so to say. There were unions already at the time. You know, the CIO was formed in 36, the beginning of it. And so there were unions at that time. There was a little more protection, and there was a little more openness, even in the shops. But so I was a club president of a club of maybe 150 people while I was taking care of two kids. So I was pretty busy.
Yes. Did you work before your child, your son, was born?
Yeah.
Were you working in plants, in the war plants?
No. I really worked up until I worked in small plants. I told you I was working on small plants. Eventually I went to work in Montgomery Ward in the office and stayed there for a while, and it was really just for a job. And basically I was working just for a job at the time. I didn't get into the war plans until after my husband left in the army. Then I went back to the army.
What kind of a plant did you go into?
I went to work with Stuart Warner.
Okay. And what did they do?
They are a major a producer of instruments of various kinds for cars and radios. Well, they make radios and stuff too, but instruments. And at that time, the instruments were for war purposes, speedometers, calibrators, all kinds of things that are, you know, specialized things for cars and so on. But they had various other things at that time that they were making for the war. They became a war plant. And so I went back, when I went back to work, I went there and applied, and I got in. And there was a union in there. The United Electrical Workers had just, after three tries, had won a labor board election. the company had outfoxed them twice before. Outmaneuvered, really, because but you know, you have to remember that the Wagner Act was passed in this period. Roosevelt allowed the Wagner Act to come in, and that gave the unions a little bit more strength. And the company was not supposed to interfere, and the union was able to convince the World Labor Board, which conducted the elections at that time, and the National Labor Relations Board, take the elections outside of the plant, so the workers were away from intimidation and so on. And it squeaked through. It won, but not by very much, but it did get in. So by the time I came to the plant, the UE, as it was called, was in.
Did you find yourself, of course, making more money than you had before in any other job?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. A great change. And there was a merit system. After 30 days, you got so much increase, 60 days. I had never known anything like that, where you got an automatic raise, so to say. And then after 90 days, it was on your own. In other words, you would have to fight for it. But you had a steward to go to. You had a union to go to. You know, if you were not satisfied, you could file a grievance. It was a whole new world.
Where were your children at this time when you were working in the plant?
Well, they were going to nursing school.
Was there child care set up by the government for women workers in the plants?
No such thing at that time, no. I had a private nursery that I had used before when we had just a girl. And then when I was home, she stayed home. And then when we had to go with the boy, I went back to the nursery and they took him. But it was not very satisfactory, and before long I really started a drive to open up a nursery in the school. And with the Communist Party Club and the other women in the community, not through the plant.
Mm-hmm.
And we finally did get them established in the school. I would drop them off and pick them up. And it was, to me, it was good because she was going to school already. There's 4 years difference. And so I would drop them off in the morning and she would stay in the nursery until school opened, and she'd go to school, and then when it was finished, she'd come back and be with him.
What
and then
I'd
pick them up. The girl is Wheeler and the boy is Carl.
When your husband went off to war, you said he didn't go overseas, or he did go overseas?
He did go overseas eventually.
And he was definitely on the tail end of it.
Yeah, he went overseas. He went to Europe, and really on the tail end, yeah. Because the war was over in 1945, and he didn't go in until, I would say, the boy was born in 1942, in July 1942, so he went in after that, somewhere in 1943, was the tail end.
You remember, I don't know what you were doing when you heard that the Japanese had attacked Pearl Harbor. What was your reaction?
Well, of course, we were as upset as everybody else because we considered that it was the fascists were mounting another offense, another attack. It was a combination, you know, of another attack on democracy and on the people of the world. And my brother-in-law, by the way, who was home at this time, signed up right away for the army.
Did anybody ever make the statement or have the idea that perhaps maybe the war with Japan was wanted by the United States, that we pushed Japan into a war with us?
I don't recall anything like that. Maybe it was going on around, but I don't recall.
When your husband went away to war and you were left alone with the children, was it more difficult for you?
Yes.
How did your life change as a result of it?
Well, it was very difficult. I had to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning many times. The house was cold in the winter time, you know. Steam, even the heated place didn't come up at that time. Prepare stuff, get them up, I had to be to work at 7:30, so I had to get there. I used to get them up at 5:30, and we'd play games, heat the kitchen up and bring them in there, play games while I got the breakfast down them and bundle them up. But you know Chicago, you have to put on all the clothes and the snowsuits and the boots and so on. And many times I would leave them sitting on the steps waiting for the car to come to pick them up. Of course, we lived in a building with neighbors who lend a hand and so on. And I would go off to work. There were many problems with children having to be picked up. What if they didn't come to pick them up, you know? And I'd go to work for 8 hours, sometimes more, but mostly I'd stay to the 8 hours. Then I'd have to run home and start, you know, supper and take care of the house. And I was still involved in meetings. I became active in the union very quickly. And the union, since it was a big plant, and one local, the union had an office right near the plant, a block away. So when I became active, I used to stop, many times stop off there to take care of whatever business I had, and then went home from there. So it was very hard. I was working in the plant. I was working on machines and things that were not easy, standing on my feet most of the day and so on. So it was very, very difficult. I had complete responsibility for a house and kids and a car at the time. And a husband overseas, you know, whatever, and then whatever political work, you know, which you never give up. You just try to reshape yourself. And you're not in a community organization, you can't keep up with that so much. You reshape towards the shop, you know. So it was difficult.
Were the workers in the plants happy with the union? They feel better about having the union?
Well, when I first came in, I would say, my department was not, but the plant was newly organized and having a very rough time with the company. It was an anti-union company and continued to do everything to try to destroy the union. They had, in fact, they sent people in to run for office and to get into the union in order to create disruption and to create problems and not be as militant, you know, as the UE, which was a left oriented union and, you know, was a militant union, and these people would come in and say, try to keep the workers from going in that direction, both in the fight for contract, you know, when the negotiations were on. They were always ready to concede. And they were really, at one point, they actually, a person was elected as the president of the union who was actually a company guy. So they were continually, unlike some companies which accept it in that sense and then fight with the union and so on, but they just tried to destroy it from the very start. So the shop was in very rough shape in the sense that the company never allowed it to settle into a good union shop, you know. And it was a big shop, and they had a hard time getting the people to understand. They tried very hard, the union did. But my own department was very dissatisfied with the union, was not in it. A large part of it had not joined. There was no such thing as compulsory membership at the time. That came along after a number of contracts. We finally got to a point where people, once they joined, they had to stay in. They couldn't just, you know, wander out. So that, and they had good reason for not being in the union in my department, I would say, because we had a foreman who was impossible. He was a Nazi in every way, they were scared of him. They were literally frightened of him, and the stewards did not know how to deal with him. It was, I would say, maybe 2/3 women in the shop. Every ethnic group you want to think of, plus everybody had come to work, you know. They were hiring for the first time in this plant, Jews and blacks and so on, you know. They held it off for a long time until the war years just forced them to, because they couldn't get the contract. So you had a lot of dissension, you know, and they didn't know how to get past this foreman, and just couldn't organize. So go ahead.
When did you start hearing about what Hitler was doing to the Jews in Germany? Do you remember?
Well, we heard about it, but, I think the biggest impact of all on me was one woman who was in my department was a refugee from Czechoslovakia. She was Czech. Her husband was German. And I became very good friends with her. And we told the department the story. She became very important in the department. He was the head of the Berlin Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
Jews. And they ordered him to break with her.
Mm-hmm.
They had two children at the time, or they had one at that time, and he refused. So she went back to Prague, which was her home, and he followed her. And they stayed there for a while. They were able to work for a while and so on. And then Hitler invaded Czechoslovakia, and they had a run from there. So they came over here. And she was in the plant in Stuart Warner. And her little story, we became very fast friends. And she knew I was a communist, and so on. So, that kind of brought it close, really close to home, because she told many stories. But the impact was not as great, I don't think, in this country as we really didn't get the whole feel of it.
You don't feel that the Jews in this country would realize the significance of what was going on in Germany in terms of the extermination of the Jewish people?
I don't think so. I don't think it hit them until much later. The real impact of it.
After when they opened up the concentration camps and
the stories started to come out, yeah. So there was knowledge that that there was a persecution of the Jews, of the communists, of the Catholics. That in fact part of the anti-fascist movement was based on all of the Niemöller statement. The Catholic priest Niemöller, who said first they came to get the Jew and I didn't do anything, then they came to get the communists and I didn't do anything, and they came to get this one and I didn't do anything. Finally, when they came to get me, it was too late.
Mm-hmm.
So, there was a strong feeling in the anti-fascist movement about persecution that was going on and the ravages of the Jews. But I think the impact of Hitler came later. That's my own feeling. It came later of the extent of it, the vastness of it.
Yes, that's I can imagine later how people must have felt who went along with Stalin and the pact that he signed with Hitler, and when they later looked at what was happening, even though, it was signed for other reasons.
That I don't know that that's true about all people. People, they have funny things happen with history. they see it at a moment and they think it had to happen, and actually don't hold that responsible for what Hitler did. In fact, whether that happened or not, Hitler probably would have gone his way on the Jews. I mean, I don't think that laid the groundwork for Hitler, for what Hitler did to the Jews, the extermination of the Jews. It had other impacts on the communist movement, but I think the important thing is that in these later years, as we see the role of the Communist Party in the United States, we have some feelings about it, just supporting Soviet Union no matter what. And that played a role in that was one of the earliest things. Whereas we should have, if they needed it historically, maybe that's true. You would have to argue that separately. But we did not need to support the action because of the, in our country, we did not need to support that action. And we would not have been any worse off for it, and we probably would have been better off in the eyes and the credibility of the party for the rest of the people. But this party has never, I have some differences with this party at this point, and it has never recognized it, or I've never publicly recognized it as an error.
Hmm. When your husband came back from the war, which I assume he did, otherwise.
Yes, he did. He was wounded and came back.
He came back in 45?
45, yeah. I'm trying to remember exactly.
Did you continue to work when he came back?
Yes.
Did you find that, did you see, observe, or feel that women were being forced back into the home now that men were coming back from the war?
Well, certainly that happened when the war was over, because there was a great deal of job loss. There was a period of great unemployment right after the war ended, because of the, you know, while the change about took place.
Yeah, it took them 3 months.
Well, because they went into Korea. I mean, they started to prepare for another war, so that's why it took them, you know. Korea came not too long after,
came right after 1950.
Right? No, I'm wrong. Okay. But the arms program continued, but it took them about 3 months for reconverting, but in some cases it took longer, it depended on, you know, on what they were.
Did you think your job was in jeopardy?
Well, let's turn it off for a minute. Did I think that my job was in jeopardy? Well, my job was not in jeopardy at the time, although it didn't take long, because I was a steward for one thing, and I had developed some seniority at that time. We had certain protections, you know, under the union goes first and so on. But my department was a kind of department that continued to work, so that we didn't get into too much problem, although there were other bumpings in the plant at the time, and before long it really started to cut back quite a bit. Later on they started hiring again, you know, and people will call back. But in the meantime, we got caught in the process of a big struggle in the plant. We had a lot of union activity in between that time, and we developed a very strong union in the plant eventually, and wound up in some spectacular contract fights and demonstrations, and wound up in an arbitration case because I was fired by the company.
What's the arbitration case about?
Well, I was fired by the company for a number of reasons. For not being a good worker, for using my the time that for misusing my steward's time at the expense of the company, not therefore not doing my work, and of course last but not least for being a communist. And it was a very unusual case, so this was an unusual company.
Didn't they know you were a communist? And you put it down on your application?
No.
No, you didn't.
No, you don't put certain things like that down on an application. You don't get any job by putting... Never!
No, but I thought that everything was cozy-cozy there.
No. And then I said, when I was saying that, people who were in the plants...
Knew better. Right, okay.
And especially to get hired, and especially by such an anti-union company, you were not going to put anything down on.
But did they know you were a communist?
Well, at